Hi, this is Peter Wingfield. I play Mythos on Highlander, and you're listening to The Blood of Kings.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover everything from the Highlander universe. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about the Highlander episode Revenge is Sweet from season one. I think it was episode 10. We're also going to be doing a Happy Highlander New Year. I'm Kevin, your Blood of Kings Highlander podcast co-host. But please welcome my co-host, Lee Fillingsis. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you feeling today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited. We're back into the new year here of 2021. Getting back into Highlander. We took a little break through the new year and a little bit of the holidays and such. And our last few episodes were talking about Highlander merch, but it's 2021. Still got some COVID stuff to deal with through the rest of this year. We'll see what happens with that. How are you doing?
You know, I'm pretty good. As I was preparing for this, kind of doing a final rewatch today, I realized this is the first season one episode you and I are talking about. Because we did some season two and some season four with Norm.
Yep.
And I won the contest, and you talked about season five for me. You talked about Duende. But season one visually is my favorite season. So this is my first time doing that.
You have mentioned that, and I've always thought that was an interesting take, and I love it. And so what we're going to do, because, you know, obviously you weren't with us for when we did the season one, see it or skip it. So this is cool. We're diving back into season one where it all started. But before we do that, we want to have a couple things we want to discuss real quick. First of all, want to do a quick remembrance and a tribute in remembering Stan Kirsch. Who played Richie Ryan just over a year ago. He passed away, and we did a couple tribute shows, of course, last year. We had Norm on and a couple other guests and such, and it all caught us off guard. It shocked us. And one of the things that I remember the most is comments that were made by you, Lee, about how you were not only were you a huge fan of his, but you also made the comments that we were kind of living as fans, living through Richie Ryan's eyes and being opened up into this world of immortals and the fight to the death. And I thought that was a really cool note that you did.
Well, thank you. It was, you know, again, you know, when you watch it as a kid and you watch it just as a fan, you kind of sit there and enjoy it, and you don't always understand everything you enjoy about it.
Yeah.
And then when you kind of start looking into it analytically, you sort of start to realize the pieces that are put together. And so much of the story depends on Richie kind of saying, this is weird. You know, why this, you know, and it allows us to kind of, you know, slowly dip our toes into it, you know, kind of get used to the water and then have this, this break. And I think it was brilliant to make him a pre-immortal. You know, where they decided in the process to make him an immortal or not, I think it really allowed, again, as an audience member, to go from this normal person and then to really be immersed in that world. I think it was a genius stroke. You know, I'm obviously a huge fan, but that little bit of writing probably is what kept the show going.
You know, that's an excellent point. I think that was overlooked by a lot of fans and maybe critics and such. And you're absolutely right. And Stan was such a cool person. I had a chance to meet him at the Highlander convention back in 2017 in Los Angeles when Norm and I were there. And we didn't have a chance to interview him, but he did come by and say hi to us. We got pictures taken with him. He was very sweet. He didn't get a chance to stay the whole weekend. I know that he had to have some elective surgery following, I think, that Monday after the convention. Yeah. I think it was on his neck or something like that, which was he did point out the irony in that on stage and joked about it.
Are you talking about it on the podcast?
Yeah. He was such a cool guy. And unfortunately, he took his own life. And we wanted to celebrate him just real quick again and say that we miss you, Stan. So rest in peace. Now, another thing, Lee, that we want to touch on and tease right now is it's 2021. If you do the math correctly, what happened 35 years ago, Lee?
Oh, geez.
Take your time.
Oh, I know. Reagan got inaugurated into a second term in office. And the world...
Reaganomics kept on rolling.
It was the premiere of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Jewel of the Nile. Highlander. Nice there's that Highlander movie came out.
nice deep cut,
starring some French dude playing a Scottish dude and some Scottish dude playing an Egyptian dude pretending to be Spanish. And some American dude pretending to be
pretending to be a dude.
Pretty much, yeah.
Sorry, a little Tropic Thunder ism there. Yes.
Wow, the insecurity in here is amazing.
Yes, well said, sir. It is the 35th anniversary of the original Highlander, 1986 Highlander, that started it all, which is the reason why you and I are talking. Highlander, yeah. We probably would have never met Lee if it wasn't for Highlander. My fiance and I, Aaron, we share a special bond with this film as well, as it has brought us together. And so what we're going to do this year is we're going to celebrate in more than one podcast installment the 35th anniversary of Highlander. And one of those things that we're going to do is talk about the original movie straight up. You and I are going to have a chance to do this. What's funny is that, when we first started this podcast, Norman, he was also one of the co-founders of the Phantom Podcast Network, but also my original co-host for Blood of Kings. We did that. That was one of our early episodes in 2016, was talking about the 30th anniversary of Highlander, which also released a Blu-ray edition, I think a few months later. I'm excited talking about Highlander again and that original movie and the impact that it had on us.
Yeah, and we've talked around it. Yep. We definitely talked a lot about the production when we were reviewing A Kind of Magic with our friend Mr. Melville.
Yes.
But I don't know that we've just specifically, you and I, sat down and talked about, the reason that we're friends, the reason that we're, meeting in the middle of the day from, across or halfway across the country. You're out there in Cali and I'm up here in the frozen tundra.
I know, right? No, that's going to be fun talking about and our experiences of experiencing, Highlander and the impact that it's had on us. But we're going to, obviously, you and I will watch the movie and get up to date on it. And, we're going to...
I don't know, you might have to twist my arm on that
one. We're going to get into some detail and stuff. We'll probably do a cross promotion with our other podcast, Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite movies and such. So, it's funny too about Couch Potato Theater is that the idea of that podcast is you may own a digital copy, you may own a physical copy. And, with our interview with Jonathan Melville on that other episode, yes, we own a lot of physical copies of this movie. But, it comes on regular television or cable or HBO, you're just going to sit there and watch it, even though you've got all these copies on the shelf, right?
And I'm still sitting there looking jealously at your, rental box of the original release of Highlander sitting on the shelf with the plastic part that just goes pop as you open it.
Oh yeah.
I'm still jealous of that one.
Yeah. The old plastic one, the old plastic of each of them. That was how I discovered Highlander. We'll go into that later. So yes. Okay. So, but let's get into our main topic here, man. This is Blood of Kings. We're going to be talking about Revenge is Sweet, And happy Highlander New Year. Now, this is your idea, Lee, because when we were discussing what stuff we're going to be covering this 2021 year of Highlander, and it's, you know, we just had a new year, you were like, well, I got the episode. And why?
Well, this one is the, and I'm going to have to go, and Andy will probably tell me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the only one that actually happens on a holiday or references a holiday, but the opening scene happens New Year's Eve, 1989.
That's right. 88, 89. Yep.
Just so
you know, 88, let's throw back here. That's when I graduated high school. 88 was also the, I remember the Dodgers won the World Series. 89, I had obviously moved out of my parents' house, got my own place. I was working at a jewelry store. What were you doing in 88, 89?
88, 89, I would have been in seventh grade, you know, because I'm not an old man. no, I was in seventh grade living in Omaha at the time. Miller North, go Mustangs. Let's see. I would have at that point been training at the American School of Karate and Judo.
Nice.
Under Master Terry Byrne. I would have been working towards my red belt, if I'm remembering correctly.
Please tell me there was a kid named Johnny that used to bully you.
No, this was just short of them actually moving me into the men's division, because in seventh grade, I believe I was already 6'1". So it was pretty hard for people.
No one was touching you.
Yeah. They would in groups. And those sneaky little guys could say, oh, Lee was beating up on, you know, Wes, and we all just jumped in to help him. And,
okay, gotcha. You know, yeah.
That's about the only way those guys could bully me.
So I thought it would be kind of fun. Now, what's interesting about season one of Highlander is that we get a intro that I kind of miss watching later seasons of Highlander. And so I'm going to do my best. Here we go. I was born 400 years ago in the highlands of Scotland. I am immortal and I am not alone. Now is the time of the quickening, when the stroke of a sword will release the power of the quickening. In the end, there can be only one. How was that?
There was a little bit too much emotion. It sounded like you cared when you read it. you know, like I just kind of feel like they got Adrian at like the end of a 7-day shoot, you know, and they're like, okay, we just need you to read this. And he's like, I was about to go to the bathroom. Well, just do it anyway.
It kind of sounds like he recorded it in a bathroom, like famously Sean Connery did when he did the intro to Highlander.
I'm kind of feeling that. I really do. I think, you know, again, this is sort of my favorite intro. You know, once we kind of get past that, I do like that they are using the imagery from, Connor's little hold in the movie.
Yeah, the keep. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoy it. You know, it's got that oomph, that excitement going for it. I mean, you sort of get the drama in the later seasons.
Right.
But this one really just sets you up that you're going to watch an action show.
I'm glad you mentioned the keep real quick, because and I'll tease more into this in a future episode, since we're celebrating 35th anniversary of Highlander. The base of that keep still exists there in Scotland, and there is someone living in it.
Really?
I'm just going to leave it at that, and I'll get into that later.
Was it like some old man that said that you're going to have to fight Ahriman? Is that?
No, it looked more like someone that didn't quite finish college and is living on whatever they can do to survive. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, if that's where I ended up, like, yeah, I'm just living on the set of Highlander, you know.
I don't know if they know that or not, but yeah.
Yeah.
So we are talking about Revenge is Sweet, season one, episode 10. And obviously, Happy New Year, 1989. One of the reasons you chose this is because they do actually acknowledge a new year. So we might as well do this. And of course, one of the things that we want to do here with Blood of Kings is jump into and just kind of talk about an episode, you know, and kind of relive our feelings for that. But also you, with season one being, I guess, your favorite visually anyway, we're going to talk about this particular episode, and I'm glad that you did, because we're going to touch on the the filming locations in a little bit, but this is the famous one that stars Vanity. Season one, they were getting any rock star they could. There was a theme. We've actually recorded an episode about the rock stars of Highlander, and so go back and check that out. But this also has Walter Reinhardt, and there's reference to his move later on in another episode. But let's do a little plot summary here. Duncan fights an immortal named Reinhardt at a New Year's Eve party in 1989, but Reinhardt escapes. Duncan first encountered this immortal over 100 years ago when he tried to rob a horse and buggy that, of course, Adrian's character was in. Years later, while browsing Duncan's antique store, a mysterious woman named Rebecca Lord inquires about a sword that Duncan once took from the rival immortal Walter Reinhardt. Duncan agrees to let her test the sword, and he is shocked to find that she uses the same fighting style as Reinhardt. Seeking revenge for the apparent death of her lover, Walter Reinhardt, Rebecca Lord toys with MacLeod before she attempts to kill him in Reinhardt's sword. Rebecca knows nothing of immortals or their combat, and she believes that MacLeod murdered Reinhardt. Unbeknownst to her, Reinhardt is still alive and is using Rebecca in a cat-and-mouse game to draw out MacLeod for their final confrontation. Director was Ray Austin, and the writer was Lorraine Dupree, of course, starring Adrian Paul, Alexander Vandernoot, Stan Kirsch, and as we mentioned, Vanity as Rebecca Lord. So, first impression of this episode, Freely?
I mean, way back when, I just loved this. This was, you know, you got the hot girl. You got, I think, one of the best uses of the antique store set.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way that they're kind of moving through this. It's probably this one. And what's the one where they have the quickening in the theater and a flashback?
Oh,
those are the two, I think, that use the set right. The best.
Right, right. Yeah.
But I think looking at this, you can tell that Vanity probably put the most work into her sword play out of anybody.
Yeah.
Up to this point, once you get to England, once you get to France, most actors actually have stage combat as part of their training, but that's not as, or was not as big of a thing in the US as it
is. It weird that Vanity got to train with Bob Anderson?
Yeah.
Isn't
but
cool?
I mean, yeah. And I mean, that had to have been like one of the highlights of his career.
I know. Right. Of all the legendary people that he's trained with, and we did a Bob Anderson episode, go back and check out last year. But yeah, it's just one of those weird little trivia things. So, and I want to mention real quick, speaking of trivia, the Blood Alley, which is what they call it, which is the outside exterior shots area of the antique store. And of course, where you see Vanity's character, Rebecca Lord, you know, beat up on a punk and then is later killed. That's all in the famous Blood Alley. And when you go to Vancouver, there's a lot of alleys there. And it's very cool. And there's a lot of scenes in Highlander Vancouver locations, AKA Seacouver locations, that are filmed there. And I actually had a chance to see a lot of these filming locations, including Blood Alley here with Andy Sloan back in 2019 when I went on his Vancouver / Seacouver tour, which I highly recommend that you guys do once he gets a chance to start doing that again. But
once we can go places again.
I know, right? Yeah. But I want to talk about this, this house that is Rebecca Lord's house. It's called the Aberthaw House, and it actually exists, and it's been used for more than one Highlander episode. I think it's about three or four, if I remember what Andy said, but it's been used for other locations as well. It's a gorgeous area, and when Andy and I visited, there's a scene where Duncan pulls up to the front of it. You can go there as well. There's a main entrance right there. And they allowed us to just walk around and check it out. It's used for like some school stuff, but it's just a gorgeous old like house / mansion with these wonderful wooden stairways and two stories, obviously, but it's got these huge drawing rooms where several of these scenes were filmed. Also the scene where Duncan is naked in, was it Japan? where he gets into the hot tub thing or whatever?
Oh, no, I think that was Chivalry.
Yeah, there it was. That was also filmed there as well in one of the rooms. The outside fight, of course, was filmed there. It's just a gorgeous place. And when you go in there as well, you can see a bunch of celebrities with their pictures up like you would in a famous restaurant of all of the other Vancouver-based television series that were filming. You get to see a bunch of that there. And
I remember seeing it, I think, in an episode of Falling Skies.
Yeah, probably. Yep, yep. Yeah. A lot of people think that The Darkness was filmed there. And Andy says no. I'm going to agree with him on that and because he knows his stuff.
I know Bad Day in Building A and Free Fall both had, they used that same driveway.
Yeah.
In Free Fall, when Duncan's walking away from the auction with the new sword that he ends up giving to Joan Jett.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
one. And it was the doctor's house in, or not Bad Dang and Bill, Bad Medicine. The other bad episode.
Highlander writer Don Aleto said also Johnny Smith's house in the Dead Zone. So, yeah. Eleanor Smith says that house always makes me laugh. I swear they use different bits in different episodes. And I said, yeah, when you step inside, you see why. Because there's different rooms that could be turned into anything. And Andy did confirm, though, this house was only used in three episodes. And when you take the tour with Andy, he lets you know which other ones that there are as well. But yeah, it's a gorgeous location. So highly recommend it. So the first flashback of the episode takes place December 31st, 1988, during a New Year's Eve party. Duncan and Walter sneak out to fight. Reinhardt falls into the water below and vanishes, leaving his sword behind. Duncan retrieves the sword, and then he kind of hides him in the bushes, and he goes, he gets there just at the stroke of midnight, enough time to kiss Tessa.
Yeah.
Second flashback takes place in England during 1728, where the immortal highwayman Walter Reinhardt targets a coach and faces passenger Duncan MacLeod for the first time. They don't fight because, you know, and it's interesting too, because Walter's about to kill one of the other guys that is challenged to a fight, and Duncan stops him saying, "Your fight is with me." And I love that scene because, you know, he gives him that look like first he does this thing where I am Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. He says that first, and he does that in that Duncan MacLeod way. But then he, when he talks to the rest
back
of the
coach, yeah.
Yes, he changes his like English accent to a little bit higher pitch.
No, I did like that. And the one thing I had to look up, this it kind of messes with the timeline a little bit because he didn't get his sword until quite a bit later.
Yeah.
Sorry, that because he uses the katana in that scene, and
that's right. Whoops.
However, the tricorn hat would have been popular later than that scene was filmed. So
true.
It's 1750s. Still popular, right? I was wearing one today. You know, I put a feather in my hat and called it macaroni. That sort of thing. You know.
There you go. Now, I want to ask you about this because you see Rebecca Horn practicing on a dummy with the heart. In a popular misconception that the heart lies to the left of the chest, it is actually dead center, but slightly larger on the left side. Rebecca was truly practicing at the heart. She was off target a little bit.
That's only if you don't take into account bones.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you would want to be able to get between the ribs and not hit the sternum. It takes a whole lot more force to get the sternum. So you would want to aim to the left of the sternum in order to kind of nick the heart that way. So,
and that is
but wrong.
And that is this week's tip from Lee on how to kill someone.
Yeah. Follow us for more tips on how to get rid of a body. Just need a whole bunch of lie.
Yeah. Walter Reinhardt manipulates his former lover, Rebecca Lord, to challenge Duncan MacLeod in a sword duel, supposedly to avenge his death. He had trained the mortal woman in sword fighting, but she knew nothing of immortals and the game. He apparently did not care that she was sending her to her death. I wanted to Let me read this last bit of trivia here first. I want to ask you a question. For much of the episode, Walter Reinhardt is missing for several years, considered deceased. Revealed later, of course, that Reinhardt had faked his own death. He had spent the 1980s as a businessman and was about to be arrested for embezzlement. He used his death to elude the authorities and left clues pointing to Duncan as his killer, planning to use him for revenge scheme. One of the things I want to touch on and is that Rebecca Lord has no idea what's going on here in the immortal world. And it's alluded to in a scene when she threatens Tessa and then eventually like anonymously leaves that gift as a dress that she thinks is from Duncan. It turns out to be a poison dress, you know, but she doesn't, Tessa knows obviously what's going on, and Tessa kind of clues her in, but she obviously doesn't say it, a whole thing like,
yeah,
you don't understand what's really going on here, do you?
Yeah, and I think that was a really good line to tread, because I mean, she could have been just, you know, kind of blurted it out, and I think a lesser writer might have actually gone through that.
Yeah,
but I think the way that it was revealed finally in the episode did a really good job of getting that point across.
I always thought it would have been really cool is if this episode, if either Rebecca Lord was an immortal and wanted revenge, mm-hmm. or if she had the immortal seed and Reinhardt sensed this, and then she was killed in this episode and then became immortal. It would have been great to have seen her later on return, maybe not necessarily as a foe, but she was very charismatic. She was good with her sword fighting for someone that just learned it, basically. I would have loved to have seen more of her. And I know we discussed this when we talked about the rock stars of Highlander. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. If she had been a pre-immortal, I think that would have been a great way to bring her back. I think that she easily had as much charisma as an Elizabeth Grayson, you know, in a very different way. I think that the character wouldn't have evolved the same way. But I think that it would explain her affinity with a sword and why her husband would have spent, you know, years training her on how to use that specific weapon.
So question then. Okay. Let's say we got her killed, then she opens up. So this is really cool. So she dies. Let's say this is the alternate version of this. This is what I've loved to have seen. She dies. Okay. She comes back to life. Walter Reinhardt is killed by Duncan. She is now immortal and already knows how to use a sword. Okay. Yep. Bonus, right? So then she actually ends up with Walter's sword and carries that with her. What do you think? Do you think she would have kept it, or would she gone to her own?
I think that would have been a really good way to go. However, I also think she had a great collection in her house at that point. Mm-hmm. There might have been something that she was a little bit more familiar with. One of the things, and this is a weird callback to an episode you and I did, where I had to postpone us by about an hour because I was studying Italian foil. The method that she's using when she's going for the thrust on the dummy is a particular type of Italian thrust. And some of the postures that they were using were Italian rapier techniques, not necessarily meant for this saber, which is not a 17th century, it's a 19th century piece, but neither here nor there.
God, you are so sword nerdy, and I love you for it.
Yeah, pretty much. true story, I am in the process of negotiating to buy an original of the sword that this is based on. It's an 1895 model Spanish cavalry saber.
The one that Walter Reinhardt had?
Walter Reinhardt is using, yeah.
So cool, so cool.
The weird step on the grip is actually meant to be used cavalry style, but also to improve the ergonomics, sort of like the way you'd hold a pistol. When you kind of loop that finger over, you get a little bit better control.
Very cool.
So I'm literally this afternoon, I was negotiating for one.
Cool.
I'll put picture up when I get it.
Keep us updated on that. That's awesome, man. So what's cool about these episode or the season one DVD is that you get early versions of Davis Panzer being interviewed and walking around town and going to these locations. And I love the fact that, you know, he did this himself, kind of guerrilla style, you could tell, with, you know, a boom mic guy and a camera guy and just kind of doing this thing. And, you know, they're not very long, but, you know, when you click the special features, you see the little director clapper thing, you click on that and he comes up and talks. And he said on Vanity and her quick learn of the sword from Bob Anderson, because, you know, on these shows, you only had a little bit of amount of time to get these actors comfortable with the sword and then working on a sword choreography to a certain degree, you know. And so he was impressed with her ability to do that, and she seemed to sell it, you know. Also that they learned of the difficulties of doing a quickening outside during the day with the famous flower pots exploding. And they did not want to do that again. They'd rather have done it at night, because you get like lightning and pyrotechnics thrown into it, and it looks more impressive. And so they danced around kind of doing a daytime thing without being indoor somewhere. What were your thoughts on those DVD extras there?
Absolutely loved it. It's weird seeing him with more pepper than salt in his mustache. Because once you get to the later DVD extras, it's pretty salty. It's starting to look like, well, the view out my window right now, all the snow drifts. But yeah, I did like that, you know, and kind of like I said, you know, I mean, she really, I think other than Amanda's fight against Kallus, this is the best female sword fight in the series.
Good point. Excellent point.
With the way she's moving and her acting as well. I know that there were better moves and flashier stuff that's been done, but as far as acting while fighting, I think that's the best.
I'm going to touch on one of the Blooded Kings members comments that we're going to read more of those later in the Immortal Buzz segment later in this episode. But I want to touch on one because I want to bring this up now. I think it's important. Roy Murray said Reinhardt was the Kallus type villain we missed out for season 1. He could have played Mac for most of the season. And you know, this was something that we would see often, where we'd see the villain kind of on a story arc and stuff. And I thought Walter Reinhardt was a great villain. And I think Roy's comments on it are spot on. This would have been great if he was the haunting villain of season 1.
Yeah.
And, or at least for a few more episodes.
Yeah. Well, and at this point, I mean, they were really in that baddie of the week phrase. And you could tell that they were trying to build a little bit of continuity, you know, with this character, because I mean, you do have Angie coming back for the second time, so you actually do have a continuity outside of the three people.
Yep. Yep.
And so there's a little something there, but okay. I think that him and Grayson formed what became Kallus.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And
that's a good point.
I think they realized what they overlooked.
Yeah.
And I think that's also why they brought Xavier back. You know, and they started having the recurring villain of Horton, you know, who ends up in the last episode.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So we've got some of our own notes. We won't be able to hit all of them, but I thought we'd kind of go back and forth here. I'll start with mine. I love it in the beginning where Tessa mocks Rebecca Lord when Lord leaves, and Tessa goes, "Don't stand me up, Duncan MacLeod. Don't forget the sword." Very funny. And she's like not having Rebecca Lord at all at this point. But of course, this is before she gets threatened by Rebecca Lord.
Yeah. And I never got that she felt threatened for Duncan, like, cheating.
Right.
She just did not like her. And I thought that was a good, good tack. I think that gave strength to Tessa. Because otherwise she could just be the jealous girlfriend. Like, you're just going to leave. She never really had that moment of doubt. I mean, she kind of joked like, "Oh, which part of your anatomy thinks she's innocent?" But
right.
I don't think she ever doubted his fidelity. And I thought that was a good call.
You have a comment here about cinematography.
Yeah, I really think that this and Sea Witch, which was the episode, I believe, right before this, started turning this into more of a Highlander instead of a TV show called Highlander. You really start to get this going forward. A little bit better cinematography, a little bit better setting. I think the way that they shot on the rooftop really brought me back into, you know, the Russell McKay style of shooting. You know, I mean, very reminiscent, obviously, of Silver Cup.
Right. And that's then, a good point. Yeah.
Shortly
yeah.
after this is Eyewitness, which again uses those kinds of angles. Because before this, you know, I mean, the bridge, you know, the gathering wasn't that great. I still love the show, but it wasn't, you know, the good sword fight is always in like this hidden location. I believe having these big outdoor moments are really good. And I think stylistically, this really fits in with the second half of the season, which, you know, everybody agrees is the good half.
Right, right, right.
But this really does fit visually. And I would have liked to have seen this filmed in Paris. I think that the visuals could have been even bigger and grander, you know.
Right, right, right.
I mean, they did great with the Alta House, but this was really, I think, a great episode. And unlike Sea Witch, it was a compelling storyline.
Okay, so I always, I've been listening to the music a lot more when I rewatch the stuff. And in the scene where Richie tells Tessa that he's going in the used car business instead of working at the antique store, there's this really weird harpsichord music playing behind this. And it just doesn't fit. Did you notice that at all?
I did. And then I like remember it from other places. But yeah, you're right. It's more their...
like ding, ding, ding,
like
ding,
bad ding, news ding. Or I've got to leave. It wasn't like, yeah. Hey, I just got a job. It's, but the one thing in watching that scene, I kind of, read your notes and went and kind of clicked through online. And I just had this weird thing. Cause you know, Stan, passing and everything. If Alexander Vandernoot had stayed on the show, I just wonder what her reaction would have been to Duncan killing Richie.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Jeez, good point. Now, you and I have something both in the notes here. Tim Reed, or as you said, Venus Flytrap from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Hells yeah, man.
First of three episodes that he does, which is cool. And I just always thought the choice of him wearing a fedora, at first I thought it was kind of silly. But yeah. Now looking back, and especially my dad loves watching old movies on Turner Classic Channel and AMC and stuff. And when you see a young Cary Grant rocking a fedora from 1940s, early 50s, making it look good. And I'm a fan of fedoras. So you go, Tim. You had your own style in WKRP and you brought it back to Highlander. Just a little different.
Yeah. And he still looks like a cop. Yes. You know, he doesn't look like Venus in this. And he doesn't look like Hyde's dad, who he later played in that 70s show.
Yes.
He feels like a cop in that, you know, even with that, it's like, it's a cliche, but he reminded me almost of Bunk from The Wire. The way, you know, he's just kind of got style. He's, you know, a little bit better dressed than you expect, but definitely kind of cool.
Yes, yes. Now, I'm going to also step on the comments that the fans have given on Blood of Kings that will obviously still, we got more to talk about later in the show, but I want to touch on one thing. And I obviously want to get your take on this, is the signature move that Rebecca Lord does to Duncan, and Duncan recognizes it. But what I noticed, and I thought it was really cool, in addition to that signature move, when we get the transition to the flashback to the 1700s, Rebecca's hand swivel of the sword hilt also matches Walter Reinhardt's. And I thought that was really cool. And my buddy, former co-host of this show, yeah, Norman Lau, said, I love how Reinhardt's quickening influence. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I did the wrong one here. Here we go. I remember when he did Reinhardt's move on Graham, I was like, holy S. That's the move that almost killed Duncan on New Year's Eve. So they brought back this later on, which was really, really cool. Thoughts?
I was just blown away that I missed that. I think that's actually really cool that Norm spotted that. I thought it was great. The one thing about him rolling the sword like that, mm-hmm, the way they set up the flashback shot, Duncan wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, it's
because
true.
He's in the coach and right. Reinhardt is behind the tree. Like, he would not, there's no way that Duncan saw that.
But it was, so it was a great scene to do it though, you know.
Oh,
to,
yeah,
to
definitely.
So, yeah. you got another notes here on the show?
this is the second episode where he kind of knew the bad guy from a previous encounter. The Kevin McNulty, who played the owner of the car dealership, comes back again in 95 to play David Markham in Reluctant Heroes. He's the guy that's trying to convince Duncan and Richie to testify.
So what you're seeing is a, and we're going to tease later, that there are actors on Highlander as guest stars that come back and play different roles.
Yeah. And, you know, we see that a lot. And it's fun. The more that we watch, the more that we just kind of pick this up.
And well, let's talk about that. Another one of your trivia here is Angie Burke.
Yeah. She was in the episode, The Path Not, or The Road Not Taken. She actually helps Richie, you know, find the crew that was working with Chu Lin and with Gary and all that, and, you know, trying to get to the bottom of it, which I think is interesting because it's like this parallel storyline with Duncan. Duncan still ends up in the same place at the end. And so, like, could have been one or the other, but they but they ended up there. It is also the first time that we're seeing Richie fight.
Yeah, that's true.
But and then she comes back in this episode to buy the car, and it just, in kind of watching them, I'm like, wait a minute. She was working in a homeless shelter, you know, a couple weeks ago, and now she's got $10,000 to buy a car. And in 1992, who's paying $10,000 for a used rabbit? That's kind of a big, you know, like, I mean, those were catchy, but I think that's a 1985 model that she's driving off the lot. That's a lot of money for a rabbit.
Now, her playing Donna instead.
Yeah. As I was watching this, in my head, I kind of got them juxtaposed. And then in season three, the episode Line of Fire, a girl from Richie's past comes back and says, hey, you're the daddy. And I thought it would have been much more interesting if they had brought Angie back instead of introducing this new character that, you know.
Completely agree. Yeah. This would have been great.
Especially to link back to that time, you know, we could have, you know.
Because then there could have been a link to Richie if they had a little thing going on, you know. And so, yeah. And there was, you know, I just think that that Angie's character, there's some a good chemistry there too that I noticed. You know, I think that
she was really sweet.
Yeah, Christiane Hirt, H-I-R-T. She was really good in this. I liked her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of notes here before we wrap up trivia here and our notes here. I'm just going to say a few things here that Tessa's poison dress. I thought that was an interesting way to get back at someone. And these are two that are kind of get together. Walter gets slashed pretty good, and they show the shirt, they show the blood.
Yeah.
And I thought that was that was pretty violent for television. And I know that Highlander, the TV series, was known for being ultra violent at that time, which is funny now. But we had this great outdoor quickening that we still look at with the pots exploding, and even though you know, Bill Panzer didn't care for how tough it was to do that. Pretty darn cool.
And I do think that they were able to solve the problem a little bit. They filmed Duncan at a downward angle against kind of a dark background. So you could still see the lightning there. You just couldn't see it against the sky. So you got to give it up to the DP of this episode for figuring that trick out. Because that's, you're putting something on a boom, or you're having a guy hang out the window pointing a camera at somebody writhing on the ground. And I think this might also be the most pain he's been in a quickening.
That's a good question. Yeah, he really worked this one. That's a good point. He, it seems like his character evolved, like, okay, here we go, another quickening, you know. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, that's a good point. Did you have one or two last points that you wanted to bring out?
Just that I love The Office. I thought it was really cool. Just that
Office.
Setting. Yeah, they only used it a couple times. And I think it's much cooler than The Office that they had in the dojo.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. And I was really caught off guard in rewatching this. They're using Who Wants to Live Forever at the end.
Yes.
But it's for a mortal woman mourning like the lie and the loss of Walter Reinhardt.
Yeah.
And it's not the usual place. It's not like,
it's a little weird.
Oh, my
isn't
old
it?
Girlfriend is dead and I'm remembering her. It's no, this bastard was lying to me and made me think he was dead for 3 years to trick me into killing his rival. And I thought that was, that's a bold choice for music.
It is. It is. But the fact that, hey, you got the rights to use Queen, Who Wants to Live Forever, it's just thrown in. It works. Yeah. You know, it was kind of setting a mood. But yeah, for who it was and the setting, it was kind of weird. So, yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break from the immortal world of Highlander and let you know what other great shows are here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to the Fandom Podcast Network and all of the other awesome shows we have to offer. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture news podcast. Blood Kings, our Highlander podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite pop culture topics. End Zone, the NFL podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville podcast. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. Lethal Mullet, a 1980s and 90s action film podcast. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. And our newest show, Making Treks, a new Star Trek podcast with a deep dive into the final frontier with host Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. All right, welcome back to Blood of Kings. We are discussing Revenge is Sweet and having a happy Highlander New Year, so to speak. Actually, let me ask you this. What do you think immortals would do for New Year's? Now, the reason why I ask this is because, is this one of those things where, like, you know, they could actually enjoy themselves? Or would they use it as an excuse with all the hubbub to go ahead and, you know, meet up with a rival and try to take his head? Or would you be like Mythos and go, nope, I'm out. I'm going to just go drink some beer and watch some, you know, Dick Clark New Year's Rockin' Eve?
You know, I think it would depend on where it was. I think if I was in a city that did fireworks, I would use that as like, okay, you know, you and I got beef. Let's go settle this. You know, nobody's going to notice another
literally, light show going on. Literally, we've got beef.
Yeah.
Love it.
But, you know, I think, you know, I mean, we all know as we get older, if we don't have kids, New Year's kind of gets lamer.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm standing in a room full of people and we've got stupid hats on pretending it's 1920. And we're just going to yell when it's midnight. Like it happens at 364 other days a year.
You know, for me, New Year's over the last 10 years for me personally has either been sleeping or staying up till midnight to watch the Death Star explode while watching Star Wars with my daughter. You know, it's one of those things. So
I did watch Star Wars this year for New Year's with my good friend, Callan Corpy.
Nice.
We had nothing else to do. So she came over. I think we might've had just a little bit too much to drink because, you know, New Year's resolution time, might as well get it in while you still can. but yeah, I've had some big New Year's. I've had some lame New Year's. 2 years ago, I was the photographer at a skyscraper, you know, big, huge party. And by 11:30, everybody was kind of bored, too. And so we're all like, everyone's trying to look like they're really interested so they can get their picture.
Right.
It was we're just standing around an office building pretending this is fun.
Pretty much everyone was home for New Year's this year for because of COVID restriction. Yeah. But anyway, we wanted to go ahead and jump into the Immortal Buzz segment here on Blood of Kings. So I put a post on Blood King's Facebook page, and I wanted to get people's thoughts about this episode. I wanted to say, you know, what are your thoughts on this season one, episode 10, Revenge is Sweet? Share your opinions, and we'll mention them here on the show. David Batista said, I'm quite fond of this episode in particular. It was my introduction to all things Highlander, actually. Through various back channel changing of hands, I had somehow got my hands on an unmarked VHS tape, probably a misplaced presser, with a pristine copy of the double feature episode, The Gathering / Revenge is Sweet, on it. I watched one and then the other without ever having seen the two movies or knowing anything about the Highlander universe at all. That's pretty cool, actually. That's a great introduction. I like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I kind of reached out to him to see if he still had that presser, because that would be really cool to have, but no more.
I have the Gathering and the Family Tree.
Yeah, that's the one that I had too.
Double VHS one, but yeah, that's very cool. He also said, while The Gathering gave me the general idea of the universe and a cool plot, it was Revenge which got me hooked. The final move Duncan pulled off at the end to get the upper hand on Reinhardt and that awesome quickening which was followed was quite thrilling to a then 15-year-old me. Still one of my top 10 favorite quickenings of the entire series. That must be the exploding flower pot. So that's one thing I want to do. I want to do a quickening episode, Lee. We'll have to talk about that later. So yeah.
Definitely.
Let's see what else we got here. Oh, and by the way, you had a little conversation with our buddy Adam O'Brien. You're now a co-host of one of the shows on his Lethal Mullet Network. Of course, he has Lethal Mullet here on the Fandom Podcast Network talking about 80s and 90s action movies. But you are now working with him on his new show, Mando Mullet, talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, and we were talking, we just finished recording for the first time a couple of days ago. He let some people listen to it, and they described it as, it was really fun. It was like listening to Star Wars nerds on acid. Adam and I don't know how we talk like old friends, but we do. And it's just the very tangential, surprise, surprise,
nice.
But a lot of fun. Both he and I have an extensive background in various martial arts. So we started talking about that. And then as things happened, we just kind of move on. But
well, stay tuned to the Fandom Podcast Network to hear the show. And of course, his Lethal Mullet Network, which will have which will be out in a little while. But he said, starring Vanity from Action Jackson. But you said, but you can't forget about other stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, my first crush on Vanity came with the masterpiece, The Last Dragon, which is just an insane movie. The fact that it was made and the fact that it's successful, the fact that I know people that still watch it, I can, you know, quote that movie, you know,
Right.
No. It's a show enough.
Yes, totally. Yeah. Well, I remember her in Action Jackson and through her ties with Prince, you know, remember that as well. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Vanity 6, just going to say, I know that record, right?
Yeah.
I believe one of the songs was in the first Beverly Hills Cop. And she looked good.
Well, and, you know, I mean, I'm up here in Minneapolis, which is where Prince himself is from and where he passed. And we still kind of, you know, she's still royalty, even though she had her falling out with Prince. So, I mean, we're a little bit, we're emotional about her.
You watch after your own. I gotcha.
Exactly.
Back to the fans' comments from Blood of Kings here. Anthony Mark says, I love this episode. Clever plot twist. A flashback so recent that I could relate to it. Of course, I'm sure he's talking about the 1988-89 New Year's. Vanity was amazing. A great villain. Plus, the final sword fight was one of the best from season one. And I tagged Andy Sloan in this because we visited the house. He says, yes, we did visit that house, Kevin. It was also used in Free Fall and Chivalry. And let's see here. Oh, and Norman said, I love how Reinhardt's quickening influenced a very special and specific attack that Duncan used against Walter Graham in the final fight scene in Timeless. I'm glad that he brought that up. And Colleen Best said, I find it interesting that Christine Hurt, who played Richie's friend Angie Burke also became a successful acting coach like Stan Kirsch. She did a great job playing Angie, and I wish the character had been brought back in later seasons. It was a relationship that helped broaden Richie's background, a friend he knew since childhood who survived foster care and made a better life for herself. It would have been interesting in later seasons to see if Richie would have told Angie his secret, or if she was smart enough to figure it out for herself and remain a loyal mortal friend. I don't believe she would have become a watcher if approached to do so. That's actually an interesting point with him becoming mortal and him meeting up with her again. That would have been really cool, man.
Yeah, because I mean, really, she's been peripheral to two immortal moments, you know, because she was knocked out for that scene in the Road Not Taken. But she was there when Duncan fought Chu Lin and Kim Sun. But also, you know, when Reinhardt tried to trick Richie, that's where he ended up.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, if she was Donna, or if, you know, Donna had been basically Angie, this would have been an interesting tack to take, and it would have been something that would have allowed Richie that kind of growth that they alluded to with Duncan. You know, and maybe see a healthier relationship than Duncan had with Anne.
Yeah. Good point. Yep. So as we close out, final thoughts here, Lee, on Bloody Kings discussing Revenge is Sweet. What are your final thoughts on this episode?
You know, I really love this. You know, I know a lot of people consider Band of Brothers to be that mark where the season got good, but I really think it starts here.
That's an excellent point. Excellent point. I think this is overlooked for so many reasons.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does ramp up, because after this, you have Eyewitness, you know, and you kind of go on again and again. And you get some really good episodes after this.
Right.
And you have a few good moments. You know, I mean, Mountain Men, I think, is kind of the weird outlier in the middle of that first half of the season.
Right.
But this one was really just... This is where you can start to see what Highlander can be.
Yeah. Excellent point. Yeah, I agree. It's, you know, going back and rewatching this and seeing and knowing what's to come and, you know, some of the other stinkers too that do pop up later on. Mm-hmm. But this is a good episode. And, you know, it's interesting how there's someone who knows how to use a sword, a mortal, that is still clueless to the world. And that's something I actually wish they would have touched on more on the television series, is immortals that did not know about the world, but were, you know, that could use the sword and be someone that still holds. I mean, why can't an immortal hold a grudge against Duncan years later and still want to kill him, you know, and not having any word or know anything about the immortal world?
And I just realized something that they should have done. They should have given her one of the backdoor pilots in season 6 to see if she could have been the Raven.
There you go. That's cool.
She's a character that everyone already liked. And, you know, an actress that people would have recognized a little bit more readily than the rest.
Yep.
You know, love Lizzie, but this might have been the show that got 2 seasons.
Interesting. Good point. I like that. Well, as we close out here, we're going to let you know how you can get a hold of us here at the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, the Fandom Podcast Network is now on YouTube, and we have some original programming that goes live on YouTube, like our Fandom show and certain other shows as well. We'll probably be doing a Bloody Kings as well in the future this year. But also all of our audio podcasts drop on there on YouTube. So if you prefer to watch and listen to your content on YouTube and check out our shows there. Our Bloody Kings master feed, of course, can be found on Podbean. Go ahead and visit fpnet.podbean.com, and you can click on the button up there and just see the Bloody Kings section as well. And that's where all of our master feed is, our master feed for all of our audio podcasts, of course, there on Podbean. You can also download the Podbean app and listen to us. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, which of course includes Apple Podcast and iTunes. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Bloody Kings. Please check out, of course, our Bloody Kings fandom Facebook group, which is where we got a lot of great comments on the show about. And it is a great place for Highlander fans. So search Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. We also have Blood of Kings, a Highlander CCG collectible card game and gaming discussion group page. That's our sister page for those of you that love the Highlander collectible card game and anything Highlander game related. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can email us at bloodykingspodcast@gmail.com. My name is Kevin. I am on Twitter and Instagram under @Spartan_Phoenix. Lee, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Way of the Way. It's all one word on Twitter. It's underscored between the words on Instagram.
Awesome. There are two ways you can support Blood of Kings and the Highlander community here on the Fandom Podcast Network. First of all, search Fandom Podcast Network on Apple Podcast and iTunes or any of your other podcast platforms, and please leave us a review. We love 5 stars, of course, but we love feedback in general. Please, please give us a review there on those, Apple Podcast to iTunes. We'd love that. And also, we have a TeePublic store. Search Fandom Podcast Network or Blood of Kings. And if you like the Blood of Kings logos, you can get your logos put on cool apparel. You can also get our Team Iron Pipe logo that we're very, very proud of. An Immortal's next best friend to the disarmed swordsman as the Iron Pipe.
I'll post a picture. I was just doing a fight choreography for an upcoming film. And oddly enough, relating to a future episode we're doing, it's 2 short swords versus a long sword, very similar to Path Not Taken. But I was wearing my Team Iron Pipe shirt while we were choreographing. So I took a couple selfies and I forgot to post them, but I'll please do.
That's awesome. That's very, very cool. So support us there at TeePublic. Just search Fandom Podcast Network or Blood of Kings. So what's next? Well, we kind of teased it. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at actors that appeared in more than one episode of Highlander as different characters. And next episode, we're going to be discussing Road Not Taken, because we're going to be highlighting Dustin Nguyen.
Oh, man. And I've been talking about that episode a lot today. It's a crazy coincidence.
Funny how that works out. Lee, thank you so much, sir. Appreciate you. And
as always.
I'm Kevin. On behalf of Lee, thanks everyone for listening, and join us next again here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. That sensation you are feeling is the quickening and some busted pots. Watch out. We are one. We are mortals. Goodbye, everyone.